Hello and welcome to the Campaign Podcast. My name is Gemma Charles. I'm the Deputy Editor of Campaign and I'm joined today by UK Editor Maisie McCabe. Hello, Maisie.
Hello.
And also Premium Content Editor Nicola Merrifield. Hello, Nicola.
Hi.
So, today's pod is a school report special.
We should have sound effects.
Woohoo! Drum roll. Publishing the school reports, 99 individual profiles, is always a big moment for Campaign, and this year was no exception. It's truly a labour of love for the team. At the end of last year, we called in detailed data and information from agencies, then spent the next few months writing profiles of the agencies using a combination of the information they had supplied, plus our content, and of course, our excellent industry knowledge. Part of the process also involves lots of meetings on those all-important marks, which, as I'm sure you know, range from 9, which is outstanding, to 1, your survival is in question. And this year, for the first time, we also gave out some provisional marks.
In 2016, Campaign, which was then edited by Claire Beale and Tom Knox, who was then president of the IPA, came together to introduce diversity figures into the school reports for the first time. We've collected diversity data since then, but sometimes it's inconsistent. So some agencies will choose, you know, probably for various reasons, not necessarily anything nefarious, not to share data. And it's really difficult when you're kind of using the data from some agencies as part of your judgment about how they've done during the year and how positive to be about them, to then not have the data about other agencies. And so it just felt like some of the most difficult conversations I had were with agencies that had provided their data, but the data wasn't great and wasn't good enough. And they felt that we'd held that against them, whereas some of their competitors hadn't even shared the data in the first place. And I thought those people had a point. And I also spoke to a couple of people in the industry who kind of challenged me, basically. They were private conversations, so I won't talk about who exactly they were, but they sort of said that Campaign could and should be doing more with the school reports, that the school reports were important for agencies, that they took them very seriously, and that because of that, we had a power to maybe try and be part of the answer. So I came up with this idea of a provisional score, whereby we would, for the agencies that didn't provide us, both the proportion of women and people from an ethnic minority background in their senior management team and then also in their permanent staff, we felt we couldn't be sure about what mark to give them. So we would give them a provisional mark. So we give them a mark, but we put an asterisk next to it to just say, this is where we think they are, but we're not 100%. And so we made that clear in the forms that went out last year. And obviously the members of the team who were writing the reports were talking to the agencies about that as well. And then I actually wrote a column about it just before Easter to just reinforce that this is what we're going to do. So, you know, we're trying, I guess it's a little bit of stick. Is there any carrot? I guess there's carrot at the end if your numbers are good and it pushes your mark up. But, you know, trying to say this is really important. And for me, particularly when we look at ethnic diversity in senior management agencies, the movement there has been really slow and it actually went back last year, according to the IPA census. So we just think by, you know, having the numbers and repeating the numbers each year, that maybe that can be a small part of, you know, improving the numbers, essentially. But it's only a small thing and I don't want it to be sort of, I don't want to exaggerate our role or importance. There's lots of people in this area doing a lot more work, you know, dedicating their lives to this work. And it's, you know, really complicated, you know, societal problem that lots of people who are much more qualified and much more experienced than me are trying to fix, if that makes sense. But it just felt like a small thing that we could do to be part of the answer.
Mm. No, having returned from maternity leave after a year out and learning about the provisional marks, I think it's a great idea because there is that feeling of, you know, it's not fair. People who then declare kind of bad figures, you know, they've got to improve. But then at the same time, people who aren't declaring, they sort of get off scot-free, don't they? So I think it's a really great idea. And I think and you know what? Everybody's got to come together and do what they can. So, yeah, there are people out there whose, you know, work is dedicated to increasing diversity. But if we can play a small part in that, I think that's really great. So, yeah, it was a new innovation I was pleased to see when I returned.
All credit to you, Gemma, because you were the, I think, you know, one of the first people in Adland who started talking about the ethnicity pay gap and obviously did that, all that work, you know, trying to push the agencies to talk about that, you know, what was that, 2.5 years ago now, say. And, you know, I think at the time, Lucky Generals was maybe the only agency
they
that
were,
disclosed. And again, you know, you have to do that. It was not a tiny number. It wasn't, you know, so, but you have to give them credit for being, starting that journey and sharing that number. And since then, lots of other agencies have also joined that. So in this, you know, in this case, we didn't use pay gap figures because we sort of, again, it's about taking people on the journey rather than rushing people or embarrassing people too quickly. You know, we've got, everyone's got to be...
you have to find that balance.
Yeah. So the view we took was that the pay gap figures, so both gender and ethnicity pay gap figures are important, but we need to kind of speak to the agencies about why it's important and why they need to collect the data and why then they need to disclose the data. And so we felt that that journey was, you know, although it had been started by you, still had a little bit further away to go. But essentially my argument was that people know who works for them.
So in terms of the Nielsen tables, Saatchi & Saatchi London knocked VCCP off the top spot, while on the media side, Essence Mediacom remained the biggest agency. Maisie, tell us about some of the highest scoring agencies this year.
So this year, you know, reflecting that it's actually quite a difficult year for many agencies, you know, there was a lot going on, a lot in the financial climate, a lot in the socio kind of political climate. You know, it was quite difficult. Lots of clients. We had, you know, the cost of living crisis, inflation. It was quite a difficult year for many businesses. And so none of the agencies got a 9, which stands for outstanding for their work in 23. It's obviously important we're comparing agencies against their history. So some of the agencies that got an 8 have got quite strong histories. Even a 7 means good. So that's an endorsement of your year. It's not like that's a B, you know? Like you, I guess it's a good example because GCSEs have 2 stars now, don't they? So, you know, a 7 is an A. An 8 is an A star, and a 9 is an A star star. We didn't think that any agencies deserved a 9, but that's not to say that there wasn't great and good work in the industry. And so 7 of the agencies got an 8. So it's my view that an 8 should be really hard to get, and they shouldn't be given out too liberally. So the agencies that got an 8 this year include Amplify, Hearts and Science, Leo Burnett UK, Mother, OMD Group, TMW Unlimited and Walk-In Media. Those agencies, even taking into account their history, had an excellent year and they deserved an 8 and they should be really proud.
Well done to them. And yeah, so some other stuff about our school reports package. So of course, it's not only the agency profiles as part of the coverage, we also publish 4 Nielsen billings tables on creative media agencies, regional agencies and holding companies, plus commentary around that. A number of news stories and in-depth features on topics including gender and ethnic diversity, staffing numbers, and dealing with the loss of a big client. So a lot of stuff there. So, you know, go to the website and read it all. It's great. But Nicola, on the features output, what are some of the interesting findings from that coverage?
Yeah, so you've just mentioned a couple of our new features this year. So I'll just kind of go through those. So we always look at headcount for each agency's school report assessment anyway, but this year in more detail we wanted to look broadly at the trend, so how far agencies have seen their workforce go up or down in the past year. This analysis was undertaken by our reporter Charlotte Rawlings, and she found that there was sort of fairly even split. So 47% of agencies got larger, that was by an average of 10%, and 49% got smaller by an average of about 13%. And 3 agencies stayed the same. We spoke to agency leaders to find out what it means and how shops can build their agency sustainably. Some pointed out that obviously gaining new big clients is an obvious reason to hire new staff, but also warned about hiring too fast in case you don't get the right type of skills. And where agencies have seen their staffing go down, some leaders pointed out it needed to be considered in the context of maybe revenues going up. So there's growth in other ways and it's not the only metric to look at when you're kind of assessing all of an agency's business.
Yeah, because one of the reasons we thought about doing this was we have been using agency size, so in terms of how many employees they have, as a kind of proxy of health. And particularly with the rise of AI last year and forever, I suppose, you know, and offshoring as well, which has been quite a big thing for some agencies. I thought it'd be useful to look at how effective a measure of success for an agency the number of people they employ is, because we've obviously had an issue with billings because of the walled gardens at the tech companies. It's very difficult for Nielsen to measure digital billings accurately, and so billings as a proxy for agency health is something that, I mean, people have been talking about since I joined, you know, midweek 16 years ago. And if anything, it's, you know, a less good proxy for health now than it was then. And so because we have been using agency staff size as this kind of proxy for health, we wanted to check that we weren't potentially being unfair, and there might be like super legitimate reasons why an agency might be getting smaller but actually growing in revenue.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And some of our agency leaders spoke to us in more depth about this kind of thing. We asked them, you know, how you can go about growing an agency sustainably. So we have some clips here from Caroline Pay, Chief Creative Officer at Dentsu Creative UK. Then we have Genevieve Tompkins, Chief Client Experience Officer at Good Stuff Communications. And lastly, we've got Dan Hill, Global and London Chief Strategy Officer at Wieden & Kennedy.
We've all been in agencies where you felt that boom and bust, and it clearly doesn't end well most of the time. So we were thinking more about growth through people and culture. So if you've got people feeling psychologically safe, feeling energised and inspired and motivated to do their best work, you're going to see growth because they're more productive, the culture is stronger, they're seeing their peers do well. So we kind of thought about this rather than in terms of quantity of people to represent size, actually it's quality of experience and the output, the quality of the output getting bigger and bigger and greater and greater.
So all agencies need a growth mindset, but through the lens of what is right for the agency and its people. And that means really being careful not to go after business that's too big or that will dramatically change the way the agency works and its output away from what we truly believe in. Careful resource planning that looks across structures and is agile will help, allowing people to develop whilst deploying talent where it's needed on a regular basis. Developing long-term client relationships and getting the commercials right from the outset. And that includes building in reviews with clients that allow for adjustments and being open and honest in developing optimum ways of working.
I think the first thing is to know what, to be really clear on why you want to grow, on how you want to grow. Growth for its own sake, can be a bit wild and dangerous ride. You need to be quite purposeful with how you want to grow and why you want to grow. So for us, that, you know, about it, that could be about growing into new outputs, diversifying our own business, or working with a different mix of clients to kind of take on some new challenges. And again, you know, it's always about growth. For us, growth is always about not just economic growth, but creative growth, new opportunities for us to point our creativity in different industries or at different places, in different spaces, different channels. I think if you've got clarity on why you're growing, then that's the first step. And then I think, you know, being really choiceful with the clients and the projects we take on, making sure there's some kind of clear shared agenda between us and our clients.
We also had a feature on how to deal with losing an important client. So tell us a bit more about that, Nicola.
Yeah, this was our second new feature. So again, we always ask agencies to tell us their top spending clients, the top three, so we can get a clearer picture of the importance of those clients to the business. And we know it's been a tough 12 months for a lot of shops, so we wanted to understand what was happening in more detail around client movement. So our senior reporter, Shauna Lewis, looked at the data more closely to see how many agencies had lost at least one of their three biggest spending clients in the past year. She found that 21% of agencies had this happen. And when she spoke to agency leaders to find out how they deal with that kind of loss, many of them talked about their initial reaction. So trying to save jobs, but then, you know, having to make difficult decisions and sometimes having to restructure. But They also explain to us what steps they take in advance to try and prevent this kind of scenario from having such a big impact on their business. Some explain they limit the proportion of an agency's revenue that comes from one single client. That was quite interesting. We had some people saying it was 30% they'd cap it at. Another said it was 5%. Yeah.
That's a real gap, isn't it?
Yeah, so you can see, I guess it depends on the size of the agency itself. And
how many clients it has, probably, I suppose.
Yeah. And also the feature goes into, you know, details about depending on what different types of sectors you've got your clients in, and you'd be keeping track of how they're doing those particular sectors and what problems that they're having there.
It's quite interesting, actually, because obviously we had the sad news about Now, which is going to close in July, is unfortunately a powerful illustration of how you can become a bit too reliant on one client, because they lost BT Business last year to Adam and Eve DDB, and they didn't really recover from that. We were already working on this feature, and then the news broke last week. We were able to incorporate some of it into the feature, but it does just demonstrate how agencies really need to sort of balance their clients and think about the sort of breadth and depth of the clients they've got.
And we spoke to some agency bosses to get into this more, to find out about the importance of, you know, managing clients and ensuring a broad portfolio. So now we can hear from Nessa McGuinness, Head of Strategy at Mother, and then Kate Anthony, Joint Managing Director at Spark Foundry.
In an ideal world, you have a mix of both. You never want to be dependent on one really big retainer that everybody works on, and then if you lose that business, the agency's in trouble. And equally, it's really fun and exciting to have smaller budgets that challenge you creatively and have different boundaries, and where you have to do something in one campaign a year rather than having something with four strands of activities that are, you know, running for many years. So you get different shapes of work out of those clients as well, which is always really interesting. And it's a good way of stretching different muscles in your brain.
One of the silliest things an agency can do is go bust or broke and go for every pitch, throw everyone on it, tire people out pitching, neglect existing clients, and then not fulfill the promise that they put through. I think one of the things that we do really well at Spark is put our people first. So leaning into pitches that match our culture, but also our own bandwidth. And I think that's how you do sustainable growth, is protecting your existing clients at the same time as growing your new ones.
For one of the news stories, our data editor, Elena Lewis, crunched the numbers and discovered that only 13 of the 99 agencies improved their mark year on year. 33 got the same mark they did last year, while 39 shops saw their mark slip down. So that's the biggest group. For various reasons involving agencies without a mark and provisional marks, this doesn't add up to 99. So
we checked it a lot.
Yeah. No letters, no postcards, please, about that. So anyway,
although you can send us a postcard.
Well, if you want to. So it basically indicates a bit of a tough year for many businesses. So Maisie, your column this week touched on how some agencies' work held them back this year. Can you elaborate on this?
Yeah, sure. So each year there are many factors, I guess, that go into how people are scored. But one of the things that's most important to remember, which nobody remembers, is that the score is referring to, you know, where the agency could have got from where it began. It's not a very neat way of saying it, but essentially we're comparing agencies to their history and their heritage and their past heights or lows, rather than doing a read across in terms of comparing agencies to each other. And so it's not the same as where in, say, an Agency of the Year scheme or even our new top agencies list that we brought last year, whereas you're looking at which agencies performed best that year. What we're doing is saying which agencies performed the best given where they began. And so one of the reasons that some of the agencies who, say, got a seven, more than not just sevens, and not an eight, was because we felt that actually, given their history, or, you know, the people who work at the agency's history, you know, the types of work that they've delivered in the past, that there were, you know, some areas for development, should we say. And I sort of wrote a column, it was a broader column on the score reports, but this was one of the sort of main points in it. And essentially, lots of people in the industry find it very difficult that we are prepared to have an opinion on the work and the quality of the work. And there's a suggestion that creativity is a, you know, a precious, fragile thing, and that by being critical of work, you know, we are we're going to sort of damage the abilities of agencies to be creative in the future. Now, I have difficulties with that argument because I know that, like, in my writing, for example, I learn the most when people point out things that could have been better or aren't clear enough. You know, like, even in this column, Nicola, I think I'd made that reference to, you know, people not understanding. I this thing, you know, that people don't understand the marks. And you were like, you didn't understand the point. And it was like, the column was much better for me listening to your feedback and taking that bit out, you know? And I think I genuinely care about advertising agencies. I think they're full of really, you know, talented, intelligent, thoughtful people. And but I think the business model is challenged, and basically they've been sort of, they've kept going by essentially looking at margins and things. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that, you know, it kind of links to the point about diversity, is that the people who are working in advertising agencies aren't paid comparably as well as they were in the past, because the businesses are not making as much money as they did in the past. And they've not innovated enough. So, like, the thing that they make, so this is particularly pertinent for advertising agencies, the thing that they make for marketers is less important to those marketers than it used to be because of the change of the media landscape. And then in addition to that, the quality of the thing they make is often not as good as it used to be. So the thing is in itself less important, but then also if the quality of the thing is also declining, you know, that's a really big problem. And so, like, genuinely, I could have a much easier life if we just never talked about it. And some people would rather I did. But we're not here to take, you know, make choices to be... for an easy life, you know.
To quote your column, to have flowers sent to you and nice lunches.
I'm not here for flowers. I would rather people be honest and straight with me. And, you know, like, that's for me is a productive, you know, journalistic contact relationship, is where we can trust each other and we can be honest with each other. I genuinely don't relish upsetting anybody. I'm trying to help, you know? Yeah. That is where I'm coming from. Do we always get it right? Are we always perfect? No, because we can all learn from feedback. So, like, you know, are there ways and things that we can phrase things differently, or different ways we can approach it next time? Yeah, I'm sure, like, we're all up for changing how we do things. You know, obviously the provisional score thing was a new thing. The features were a new thing. We're always looking at how we can do it better. So I'm not in any way suggesting it's all perfect in the way that we've done it, because I think we... you know, all we're trying to do is improve ourselves, you know, and help the industry as we do it.
Yeah, well, would you describe us as a critical friend? Is that...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and obviously there's an important role for us to celebrate the good in the industry. And, you know, we have lots of schemes that do that, and we do that through our journalism as well. But that is not the... for me, that's not the reason I'm a journalist, I suppose, that bit. Mm. Like... I enjoy that bit as a human.
There are other places to go. It's not for Campaign to be just...
To just be
celebratory, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always happy to hear how people are feeling. And as I say, I don't relish the idea that, you know, we've upset and hurt people. But one of the things I did say is, to those people, is the reason that they were so cross or hurt because we had a point?
Moving on, another bit of information we collected from agencies this time around was whether they were all in Champions and Living Wage accredited. So this is a new thing that's been introduced while I've been on mat leave, and it sounds really good. I'd like to actually hear more about it. I haven't actually spoken to any of my colleagues about this, but it's a new thing that I've noticed, and I think it's a good thing. And I would like to hear about how it came about and what the rationale is. Maisie, enlighten me.
So again, like, you know, as I sort of mentioned, all for feedback, all for additions and growth. And so some people, some agency execs are already working as part of it's a Mayor of London initiative to improve the proportion of businesses in the city that are living wage accredited. So they approached me autumn last year to say, would you consider putting Are You Living Wage Accredited into the school report form? And again, I guess it's this sort of like, maybe we do need more carrots. I'll buy anyone a carrot in the ad industry who wants one. it was like, it's a soft thing. It's like, are you living wage accredited? If you're not, you have to write no. And, you know, maybe it'll make a few more people think about whether they are or not. The reason it's important is because often, you know, the majority of people who are directly employed by an agency are paid the London Living Wage. The issue sometimes comes in the contract workers that maybe are security staff in the building, receptionists in the building, potentially working in a cafe.
So it covers all of those people as well.
Yeah, so it covers, to have anyone, all your contract staff also have to be paid the real living wage to be accredited. We all know the successful running of a business needs all those people as well. Mm-hmm. And we all know living in London is expensive. And I sort of joked about it. I think I put this in the column that I wrote about it before Easter. You know, if a few agencies get living wage accredited because they don't want to look bad, I am fine with that. Like, totally fine. You know, it's one of those things where I actually don't mind about motivations. Like, if some security staff or some cafe staff or some receptionist get a bit more money every hour because the agency leader was embarrassed that they weren't living wage accredited, like, I am delighted. You know, like, it doesn't really matter whether people are being performative in the space, because what we're talking about is, like, the actual wage of real people.
Yeah.
You know.
And we've actually heard from the Living Wage Foundation. They told us that since we decided to include it in the school reports, they've had many more companies in our space sign up. So
that is
hopefully
fantastic.
It's working.
That is really good. Yeah. No, I'm genuinely like touched by that. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Something we're doing is having a positive effect.
Not everyone's cross with us. No, I shouldn't overplay it. I haven't. I am here for feedback. So if people are disappointed and want to talk about it, I'm you know, more than happy to do that. And then on the All-In Champion thing, obviously the All-In census is something that first happened in 21.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, really important cross-industry initiative to, you know, again, it goes back to the school, or, you know, it's alongside the general data we have in the school reports. You know, the more information the industry has about who works for it, the better. And, you know, the census also asks questions about people's experience in the industry as well. And so the census was done in 2021 and 2023. And off the back of that, they came up with some actions. I think there are now 9 actions that businesses have to do to then be an All-In Champion, essentially. So to be an All-In Champion, you have to demonstrate that you've taken the actions that they've recommended. And so, again, it's just a way to kind of highlight the agencies that have done that work already, and also maybe encourage a few more to look at doing it. We didn't actually include whether people were All-In Champions in the individual reports this year, but it might be something that we do next year. But we did a nice handy list. So there's an article on the campaign website where you can see all the All-In Champions. And that's what we did with the provisional scores as well. We haven't published an article which tells you which agencies were the provisional scores, because it's not about that. What we've done is published an article with all the official scores. And so if people want to determine from that who hasn't got one, that's fine. It's not like we want to lift people up for ridicule or criticism. You know, we want to try and bring them along in a slightly softer way.
And celebrate the people that are already doing it.
That's probably a much better way of phrasing it. We're celebrating the people who are already doing this work, not highlighting the people who aren't. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good to me. Well, thank you for explaining that, Maisie. So the school reports, not only is it those individual profiles and all of our brilliant coverage, it's also actually playing a part in changing things and, you know, I'm going to say it, making things a bit better for some people. So great work, everybody. And yeah, I'm sure that Maisie and Nicola agree with this, but a personal shout out to the team for their hard work on this.
It's been... and the freelancers and obviously our production colleagues in the studio at Haymarket.
Indeed. So many people involved, and to all the agencies that submitted all their data and have had many conversations with us since. So
absolutely, thank you, thank you so much, and roll on school reports 2025. Okay, thanks Maisie, thanks Nicola. If you'd like to learn more about what we've been discussing today, please visit our website campaignlive.co.uk. Details of our subscriptions are available at www.campaignlive.co.uk/membership. If you enjoyed this episode of the Campaign Podcast, please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. A big thank you to Haymarket Studio Manager Nav Powell and to producer Till Owen. And also to you for listening. I hope you join us next time. On behalf of the Campaign team, goodbye.